You're listening to Trek FM.
This episode of To the Journey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iOS, Windows, Android, Kindle, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hi, this is Garrett Wong. I played Ensign Harry Kim on Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
The journey.
To the journey.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another edition of To the Journey. My name is Charlene Schmidt. I'm one of your co-hosts, and with me, as he is every week, is
Tristan Riddell.
And today, we are going to bring you a commentary for the season two opener called The 37s. And this should be kind of interesting, as we previewed last week. Tristan likes this episode. I do not. And I want to preface saying I don't hate this episode, but I have reasons for not liking it, which we will undoubtedly get into in the commentary. So I think we're going to have a nice little contrast. And for those of you listening in your iPods or wherever you're listening to us, however you're listening to us, why don't you queue up your Netflix or a DVD player or whatever you've got and follow along with us. We'll do a countdown, 3, 2, 1, play, and then that's when you start syncing up with us, and off we go. We ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. 3, 2, 1, play.
Oh, I'm really loud right now.
Turn your sound down, Tristan.
And that goes for everybody listening.
Yeah. I highly doubt we were the only people doing that. So, you know, one thing that I do find kind of funny is Janeway's hair is very extra fluffy in this episode.
I always thought, like, it was a, it was kind of like a season two treat where they're like, hey, we're trying something new.
Maybe so. I think it did get a little bigger as season two kind of went along. Like, yeah. I don't know, compare this to Parallax, where it's pretty, not totally combed back, but it's not nearly as high up and sprayed as it is here.
Okay, Chakotay asks, like, gasoline? What's that?
yeah.
I mean, don't you think, I mean, I don't know, even though you're advanced and in the 24th century, don't you think you would have a little bit of historical knowledge that we used to run on fossil fuels, you know? Like,
yeah, you would think. I mean, we know about life in the 18th century. Don't you think some things would just carry over?
Yeah. Like, I knew it was really cold when they slept, you know, in their beds without, you know, having coal. You know, I understand that.
Right.
Coal?
Yeah, you just had that little oil lamp and that's it.
I guess maybe because we still run on those things. I don't know. Maybe it could be different.
I don't know. Yeah. That might be a good thing for listeners to chime in and tell us what they think on the forum. How about that? So, okay. One of the reasons why I do not like this episode, and I just can't get into it. We already saw one big reason, and that was the Ford truck floating in space.
That was awesome. What are you talking about?
I know. I understand. It's an awesome visual. I like it, too, but it makes no sense that they beam this thing into the cargo bay, and they're able to start it when it's been floating around in space.
Well, space is a vacuum.
Does that mean it's a preserver, though? I mean, all I really
yes.
needed to buy it.
Yes, it does, actually.
Well, okay, here's the thing, though.
Like, it does mean it's a preserver.
A lot of the fluids, though, would not survive in space. So what I need is one throwaway line from either maybe Tom or Blana, even, saying, we had to do some repairs and put in some fluid to get this thing going, and now we're going to try it. That's all I needed, but we didn't get it.
Nah, I think that's too labored. I think it was just fun to start it up.
Okay, it's intriguing. I'll give you that. But that's it. It's just implausible.
Is that the only reason you don't like the episode?
It's one of the big reasons why I can't get into this, because it just does not compute in my head.
Well, I think you're in the wrong series if you're looking for scientific plausibility.
Maybe so, maybe so. But this is just too extreme for me. My bullshit detector is going off right now.
Gonna have to cut that.
Oh, well, bleep it out.
Speaking of bullcrap, Janeway's about to smell manure in the truck.
Yes, yes.
And that also, you know, is preserved in space. If
apparently.
I ever needed to buy a truck, I would try to find a truck like this. I love the style and look of this truck, yeah.
It is cool. You certainly can't get anything like this now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, of course, this is where we learn where Tom Paris is totally into the 20th century.
I love that he becomes the 20th century expert. And you always need one of those. Even in TOS, they had a historical expert for the 20th century.
Yeah. These people exist, apparently. You have very particular professions, I guess.
And they existed on the starship. I remember in Space Seed, like, Kirk even said, they're like, who do we have that's an expert on so and such and such? And they're like, oh, that would be Ensign blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And that was just so perfect. So perfect.
Mm-hmm. And so then you have to consider, okay, they probably have somebody like that on every Starfleet vessel, right? Not just the Enterprise?
Well, you know, with the Enterprise, I mean, they had, what, an average of 350 people crammed into that starship? And then on Voyager, they only had like 140, but it was the same size ship. Can you imagine, like, three times as many people on Voyager than there is now?
Yeah, it was close quarters there on the Enterprise. So Tom has no trouble at all learning how to start the vehicle. He knows what he's talking about.
Well, he does build his own Camaro later on in the series.
That's true. Yes. And I do love this.
I was going to say, I was like, Tuvok right here.
Yes, he pulls out his phaser. That is hilarious. Everybody ducks and Tuvok pulls out the phaser. Way to go, security chief.
Okay, here's the thing. When we hear that noise in present day, we think it could be a truck backfiring or a gunshot. In Tuvok's era, when would he ever hear a gunshot?
Yeah, not unless you're in some ancient historical holodeck program, right?
Exactly. Like, only like if the truck made up, that's when he would, you know, be freaking out.
You would think, but then, I don't know, maybe it's just the shock of a really loud noise, like a balloon popping.
Yeah.
I mean, that scares me almost every single freaking time it happens.
Yeah.
Expect it or not, it just does.
I thought this was interesting because in every single episode in every single show where Morse code is used, there's always some guy or some person who knows Morse code because, oh, my uncle taught it to me because he was in, you know, the Submarine Corps, or I was a Boy Scout or I was a Girl Scout, and so we learned Morse code. There's always that person who can interpret it, and I think it's so funny that out of all of their technical knowledge on the USS Voyager, nobody knew Morse code, but we have an expert in the 19th and 20th century.
Right. Now, do you know Morse code?
No, I don't.
I don't either. But yet,
my uncle
survives.
Was not in the Submarine Corps, so.
Neither were mine. None of them. Oh, well. I guess that's what you have to have, huh?
Yeah. This is when the peppered XO was still a peppered XO.
I know. I really do miss that look on him. It looks nice.
I had a dream the other day where I met Robert Beltran in a Macy's.
Nice.
And
do you know which
awesome.
Macy's?
It was mine. It was the one, you know, the one downtown. And, I just, for some reason, like he has this little bag and he's walking around and he has really long white hair like he does now, you know?
Yeah.
And I was just like, holy crap, are you Robert Beltran? And, he looks kind of wearily. I was like, yes. And I like totally geek out on him, but I try to say like, oh no, I totally have also know you from your Hispanic and Native American plays. And, like I was trying to like BS my way through saying I only know you from Star Trek Voyager.
Right. Did it work?
I woke up, so sadly.
Oh, don't you hate that?
I know that was such a good story what I just said, but
and then you had to go off and ruin it.
But here is one of the main reasons why I love this episode.
Yes.
And that is they're going to land the ship, and it's the first time we see blue mode or
blue
alert or whatever it's called.
This is the only time you use condition blue, I think, is when you're going to land the ship.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think we might see it one other time.
We do, when in Basics 1, because Kola lands the ship to drop off the Voyager crew.
Very true.
Yes. So, yeah, okay.
I would have, yeah.
This is cool. I really do like this. It's awesome feature. I totally give up this episode credit for that. Definitely.
Yes. Yeah. This was right up there for with Encounter at Farpoint for me when they separated the ship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's that cool.
Yeah. When I was old enough to actually remember them separating the ship.
Right. I maybe did watch Encounter at Farpoint when it premiered with my dad, but no, I had to, many years later, watch it again.
I watched it live, but I was one, so I was probably more intent on my pacifier than I was the TV.
I imagine so. Oh, explosions.
I love how whenever someone wants to complain about Star Trek, they always say, you know, on a modern vessel, you know, they have shock absorbers and circuit breakers so that if there's a large shock to your instrument panel, it gets cut off at the source so that it doesn't explode in your face. And they're like, apparently they don't install those on 24th century ships.
I guess not. You got to have the pyrotechnics, man, for excitement effect.
Here I love how these struts are the size of toothpicks compared to the rest of the ship.
This is just something I cannot buy about this. Again, this is kind of what ruins it for me, is when we see those visuals of Voyager landed on those teeny little struts. Mm-hmm. Are you kidding me?
I feel like if the ship was truly dead, like say that like all power was lost, I do not think that the ship would be able to be supported on those struts. I feel like it has to use some sort of inertia dampeners
in order
to make that work, because it's so, you know, the secondary hull has a lot of weight to it.
Yeah, it just, proportionately, it just doesn't look like it would work. Maybe you're right. Maybe you've got the answer there. But do they mention that? No.
No. And also, we talked about how you can't have a giant kickstand come out from the secondary hull. It just wouldn't look as cool.
We just look a little goofy. Now, I do love it, of course, when they are playing outside, which I'm sure was a great break for the cast and crew as well.
Yeah, we didn't see Voyager outside as much as we did with other shows. Like, we saw Deep Space Niners outside all the time.
We did. We saw them in a lot of environments. Voyager did not get out quite as much.
No.
Now, okay, here's another question I have for you, and maybe you can help me with an answer. All right, if this airplane and the Ford truck, if they are such sacred kind of, like, emblems of the 37s, who this culture claims to worship, why is it not encased in a museum and preserved instead of left out outside to be exposed to the elements?
I think it's because that's where they first found it, maybe. So they didn't want to disturb it because that would be like grave robbing. I don't know.
No. I can't buy that either. We're going to have to agree to disagree. I mean, it's cool, but I just don't get it. It just, no.
There's so many times you have to just tell yourself it's Star Trek.
I know, and this is just the one where I can't. Maybe because it is modern day kind of stuff. You know, if it's futuristic space stuff, then I have to believe in that, because I have no other way to really to prove it different. But a truck in space, an airplane that doesn't look totally rusted out after so many hundreds of years? Mm-mm, no.
Look how thick those instruments are on their belts, like how big the phaser is and how big the tricorder is.
I love that they
snuck in the technology as the series goes on. Like, they snuck in an updated phaser and an updated tricorder.
They did.
Like, if you look closely, like the stuff that you see in First Contact, you will see in Voyager later on.
Mm-hmm.
And it totally doesn't look as obtrusive as this technology does.
Yeah, because they're just sticking right out. They're very obvious.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And honestly, if you want, maybe it's easy to pull the weapon out, but if you want to be a little careful, I mean, you're not going to just have your weapon exposed to broad daylight like that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I always think of Fry from Futurama whenever I see this episode and this scene.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've not watched a whole lot of Futurama. What goes on?
Oh, well, Fry was frozen in the year 2000 and was woken up in the year 3000.
Oh, okay. So, shows you how much I know about the show.
I was going to say, I mean, that's the premise of the show, but, you know, whatever, it's cool. It's cool.
Yeah, no, dude, I've maybe caught two episodes the whole time it's been on, if that.
You need to watch it because there are so many Star Trek references throughout that show.
I've seen a few of those clips on YouTube.
It's really great. It's a really... There's actually one episode that's completely devoted to Star Trek, where the entire original cast of Star Trek, surviving members, that is, make an appearance. It's great.
Oh, cool. Somehow I did not know that. I'm a bad fan.
Did you ever see the movie about Amelia Earhart with Hilary Swank?
No, I did not. Was it any good?
It's horrible.
Oh, dang.
Like, this Amelia Earhart is 1,000 times more interesting than Hilary Swank's Amelia Earhart.
Well, granted, she is being played by Sharon Lawrence. And do you remember when this aired, all the hype that they put behind this episode because of Sharon Lawrence? Because she was also on NYPD Blue, and that was just, you know, totally hot at the time.
Oh, see, I completely missed the NYPD Blue craze. Like, I've not even seen a single episode from that show.
Oh, I never watched it. I knew she was on the show, though, and UPN was pimping the fact that she was on Voyager like none other. Oh my gosh.
This is one of the very few times that we see the conference room lit, like with natural light and fluffy blue clouds. Like, this is amazing. Like, this is so much more pleasant than what you normally see.
It really is. It's nice and bright. I'm sure they're loving it. I mean, they're getting vitamin D. They gotta be feeling pretty good. Yeah, it makes a world of difference, doesn't it? It is pretty.
Yeah, I remember there was a big criticism in Star Trek Generations about how if you remember, the bridge and the sets were lit differently. Like, they used the natural light because they were near the star.
Mm-hmm.
The star that they're near, and so instead of using their own lights, they used the light that was coming through the windows, and I thought it looked awesome and cinematic, but everybody's like, it looks different, it's too different, I don't like change, you know?
It's too dark!
Yeah.
That was the big complaint I heard, and I just watched Generations last night, because of the Thanksgiving marathon on Sci-Fi.
Oh,
and I thought it gave it a nice movie quality, too. Yes, it is different, but I was able to go along with that, no problem. I don't know, it didn't bother me.
We're making movies. It's different.
Yeah, deal with it. I mean, even the movies, they're all different. You go from Generations to First Contact. I mean, Picard is two totally different people in that movie.
See, now that I can understand the argument. But when it's just a little aesthetic changes here and there, I mean, come on. That's when you need to get over yourself.
Yeah, well, consider the fact that if they had filmed TOS, like the motion picture, the same way that they did the show.
Right.
Uh-uh.
Just imagine that. Yeah, no.
Yeah, so, no.
Okay, so this was another situation where they're like, hey, you know, we can totally use the technology to get home. And then like, oh, no, we can't because of reasons.
Yep, yeah. That happened a lot, didn't it?
This was one of the first.
Yes, and you know, of course, that this, well, maybe not of course, maybe you don't know. This was supposed to initially be the season one finale, but UPN held it back to be the season two opener for reasons I do not understand.
I was going to say, this would have made a great finale, but it was strong opener.
It was, no, I don't think it really fits as an opener.
No, I do.
Mm-mm. No, I didn't think so at the time either when it aired. I just thought, this is really kind of awkward. And I think the reason why is because it was designed to be the season one finale. Because that last shot that we're going to see at the very end of Voyager flying on its way back home, that's the perfect way to leave off on season one rather than learning curve. No.
Okay. See, I can understand that. Like, I think it makes... I like it as an opener just because I think it's a great storyline, but I think you're right. I can't argue with that logic that this would make a much better closer because of the very reason. Yeah. They're like, okay, who's going to stay behind? And, you know, if anybody stays behind, if too many people stay behind, are we all going to have to stay behind? You know, that kind of thing.
Right. So, I mean, this could be a pivotal moment. And, I really wish they would have, I guess, respected the writer's wishes on that. And I guess a lot of it was because of Sharon Lawrence and they wanted to open big. But no, you ruined it. You kind of ruined it. Whenever I'm doing a season one watch, I kind of count this as a part of season one. It was filmed with season one. It just makes sense to me. That's just me, though.
I love that effect in every single movie and TV show where somebody's color comes back.
Yes.
And it comes back quickly.
And now she's fully alive.
Yeah, not rickety, doesn't have to pee, you know, just...
No, perfect working condition. One thing I do like about this episode is, for at least the 37s, anyway, the costumes are fantastic. They did a superb job on these. It's really good. And I do think they try to be authentic to the 1930s, people talking the way that they would back then and that sort of stuff.
Yeah, well, I know this is a common complaint, and the only way that you can rationalize it is by saying it's a show and it would suck if we had to explain this and everything like that, is I love how people keep their accents even though they have a universal translator to make them speak English. And it's just so funny because, like, how much accent does it take away? You know, like, do you have broken English accent? Do you have no accent? You know, it's just.
Yeah, that's just one of those things we have to accept blindly.
Yeah, exactly. And I hate it when people bring that up, like legitimately bring it up as a concern. I'm just bringing it up to talk about it, not complain about it. But when people do, I just roll my eyes and I'm like, come on, it's a TV show. Do you really want to have them like talk like bad voiceover dubbing from a samurai movie? You know, like it's just.
Yeah, no, that would just get really tiresome in the end. And then they would say, well, why don't you just have them talk in English with some sort of piece of technology and just
exactly.
correct it all?
Exactly.
We'd be right back here.
That is exactly what would happen.
Yeah. So were you rolling your eyes when I mentioned the Ford truck being implausible then, just like, because you were able to go along that with that for no problem?
No, yeah, I wasn't rolling my eyes when you brought it up, because I think that you can voice that concern, because it's not a trope, you know. It's not something that's used continually to make production easier or to make the storytelling easier. It's just made for this one moment in time. So no I wasn't rolling my eyes.
Okay.
But, like, complaining about the Universal Translator is complaining about all of Star Trek.
That's true. That is a big one.
And I think even in TOS, they even said that the Universal Translator works on brainwaves. Like, it doesn't work on voice patterns.
Yeah,
like,
I think
the one
you're right.
in Enterprise. And so that's why, you know, people always neglect that fact. In TOS, they said it worked on brainwaves, because that's why we can still hear Klingons speak Klingon when they want to speak Klingon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, if they don't know English and they're just speaking Klingon, but then they're like, no, my brain says, I want to hear this, I want this person to hear a Klingon word, so the Universal Translator knows not to do that one. You know, like, and so, but then you have to say, are the TOS rules continual in TNG era, or what? So, It's so much up in the air, and I'm sure I'm going to get some flack about this because I'm probably getting something wrong, and so the people are going to chime in on the forum saying, Tristan doesn't know what he's talking about.
Yeah, it's all right. They can always chime in on the forums or write us, trek.fm/contact.
And I would love to hear from you guys. Seriously, I'm not being facetious. I want to hear from it because I want to hear different perspectives and see if there's any kind of Star Trek minutia that would back up or completely wash what I'm saying.
Yeah, totally. I would like to know, too.
Absolutely.
So one thing that really did, I hate this part where they just take the phasers. There's not a struggle at all. No security protocols whatsoever. Tuvok is failing at his job. Hardcore!
I didn't really understand this portion of the episode.
It's lame.
And it's so brief. It doesn't feel the need to be in there.
No, it really doesn't. I mean, the only purpose it really serves is to give the 37 some power over the Voyager crew.
Yeah.
All in all, though, so what? What does it do? Nothing.
Yeah, it does nothing. And, I mean, this guy still gets shot later on.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
Shinkampa.
Yes, the latex ears Jennifer Lean was allergic to.
Oh, that's too bad.
It is. Because they are kind of cool looking.
Although, they were really cool looking, but I also really liked her hair, her natural hair.
That's true, yeah. And I don't understand why they didn't use that in the first place instead of the weird pixie wig, but mm-hmm. Okay. Her hair was absolutely fine. But again, I mean, Kate Mulgrew's hair was absolutely fine, too, and we had to wait for season 4 for that to happen, so.
Yeah.
Oh.
Speaking of hair, you definitely see Robert Duncan McNeil's hairline get a little bit further back.
Yeah, you do.
I was so happy when they cut it short, because he looks so much better with short hair. Shorter hair, I should say.
I agree. It also makes it a little less noticeable, the hair receding. Yeah. I could use a little pick-me-up, too.
You always could use a little pick-me-up.
Yeah, that is true. This part just feels like wasted time.
Yeah, I don't understand. I feel like they are kind of filling the time, and they didn't need to because they had such a great concept. I wanted to see the city so bad.
Yeah, okay, I know for budgetary reasons that I think was the reason why they never showed it to us. But for all the time that they talk about these wonderful, beautiful cities, could we have not at least seen, I don't know, a cheap matte painting or something to show it off?
Yeah. Give us at least a matte painting.
Give us something to understand what these people are talking about, because otherwise it doesn't mean anything. They either needed to not talk about it at all, or they needed a cheap matte painting.
Apparently, I'm reading some background right now. Sharon Lawrence had, she worked with Robert Beltran before, and she was a fan of Kate Mulgrew from her soap opera days.
Yes, that was in all the interviews when this aired in 95.
Yeah, I think that's cool. I love those kind of, you know, Hollywood connections that you hear behind the scenes.
Yeah, well, and apparently Mulgrew and Sharon Lawrence, they became good friends while they were filming this and really enjoyed each other's company, kept in touch for a little while afterward. I don't know if they're still friends or not, but they formed a friendship while they were doing this.
Have you watched Orange is the New Black yet?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Twice, the whole thing.
Oh, wow, yeah.
I love the show. Have you?
I have seen everything but the last episode. I didn't really connect with it. I'm not a big fan of it, but I am a huge fan of Kate Mulgrew in Orange is the New Black. She is phenomenal.
Isn't
in that
she?
Show.
Oh, and that hair. While we're talking about hair, because Voyager, we love to obsess about hair. In Orange is the New Black, oh man. Yeah, her haircut, the color, it works so good for that character. My goodness.
Yeah,
they nailed
it. Really does. And I think Kate Mulgrew said something about it. She's like, now that I'm not the chick and I'm older, I can start real acting.
Yes, she did say that.
Something like that.
Yeah, it's like she doesn't have to go for like the sex appeal factor anymore. She can just focus on the depth of her acting. And I think that comes through with Orange is the New Black for her.
I wonder if that was a little bit of a dig at Star Trek at all. Like, do you think she felt possible. Like Star Trek was holding her back? Because they brought on the chick.
Yeah. You know? Well, it might have not just been Star Trek. It was probably also Ryan's Hope, because she started that very young. Probably Mrs. Columbo. I mean, the whole bit. But Star Trek, too, I'm sure, is kind of categorized in that little... I guess it might be a small jab, yeah.
Yeah. Every race, color, and creed represented in that one frame.
It is. Yeah, it's a nice diverse thing. Although I do like to object on something a little bit later. But I'll comment on that later.
All right. All right. I love the scene with the doctor coming up. Just the great example of dry humor.
Yes. I love this visual of Voyager on the surface. We don't see it actually landed too much.
No, the scene that keeps popping in my head whenever I see that shot is when B'Elanna insisted on the overhaul on the mm-hmm. engines, and we see the casing to the warp engines off, and like shuttlecraft yeah. like taking out coils and whatnot. And I was just like, oh, that's an awesome, awesome shot.
That really is, yeah, because we never saw that ever, yeah. did we?
Well, now, no, not in another ship. The closest thing that we came to was the inside of a warp nacelle, and that yeah. was in a TNG episode.
You're right. You're right. Now, for as good as the costumes were on the 37s, I cannot stand these costumes of the guys shooting because they look like cheap garbage sack suits.
I kind of like the headpieces and how they came off so easily, but I don't know. For a human colony, it feels kind of weird.
I just don't dig it. I think they're ugly.
Well, I think we know the real life reason is so that they would hide that they were really human.
Yeah.
Yeah.
True.
But I mean, in Star Trek day and age, all they'd have to do was hide their nose ridge.
Yeah, this is true. Or their ears.
Or their ears, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Even this part here still feels like we're wasting time. I want to get to the really good part of this episode, and that is when they are contemplating who's going to stay and who's going to go.
See, I don't feel like this is a waste of time at all. Like, I like this. I like that somebody actually got shot. And
that's true.
I mean, you don't see too many hand-to-hand firefights. I guess it's not a hand-to-hand if it's a firefight, but yeah, on-the-ground firefights in Voyager.
That's true. That's true. But
and I like that it's Janeway is the one. See, these helmets. Look at these helmets. They have no peripheral vision whatsoever.
None. Which is a complete awful thing to do when you're in combat.
Yeah, it's a complete disadvantage.
They make no sense, and they're ugly, and they look cheap.
I like the layering. I like the fabric.
Yeah.
You're just overly critical, Char. It's all because of this truck, isn't it?
It's all because of the truck. It turned me off from second one. Yeah, sure.
Whenever I hear her introduce herself like that, I think of Neelix in the first episode. He's like, that's a very impressive title. I have no idea what it means, but it's impressive.
Yes. I do like that moment. Now, apparently the family of the actual Fred is a little unhappy with the way they portrayed this guy on Voyager, you know, as kind of a diehard Alky, because apparently they say he wasn't.
Well, I guess, I mean, it's, I don't know, from what I've gathered from my research, and we all know that, you know, history can be very biased, and, you know, once somebody puts a rumor out there, it can become a part of history, whether it's true or not. I mean, you know, look at Catherine the Great, for an example.
Right.
But from everything I've read, it's kind of been like this guy was loose with his alcohol. You know, so I'm not a historian. I wasn't there. I have no idea if it's true. But I feel like Voyager kind of just ran with that.
Yeah, I definitely would say that they did. True or not.
True or not. But it's kind of like saying, you know, it's kind of like when the Kennedys don't like it when they portray JFK as a hound.
True. Same difference, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, we know you don't like it, but...
Right. Well, and of course, they also kind of buy into the speculation. Were these two lovers? You know, why were they on the plane together? That sort of thing.
Well,
because Amelia Earhart was married, not to this guy. But were they having an illicit affair?
He was on the plane because he was the navigator.
Never mind that. Again, rumors.
I don't know why he'd be wearing a suit, though.
Yeah, why would you be wearing that on an airplane?
I don't know.
That does not make any sense. Good call.
This actor has been in a lot of Star Trek, hasn't he?
Oh, I don't know. I don't recognize him from a heck of a lot of things, but I do know we've seen him before. I don't know. He's probably played a few Aliens of the Week. I'll have to look up his name.
It looks like he's played... Oh, that's right. He was a He was a Vulcan in Enterprise, and also an alien captain in Enterprise as well. So that's where we've seen him before.
Oh, okay, okay. That makes sense. His face is familiar.
His name is John Rubenstein.
Okay. Familiar name. All right. There we go.
Survived.
I love the way he serves. Yeah. Said that with such energy.
Passion. I would have liked to have seen the Briori later on. You know, like they run into them. You know, like I don't know, just like you know how they ran into the caretaker species, like the female caretaker.
Yeah.
I would have liked a little follow-up later on with that as well, where they somehow figure out that the Briori that they run into are the same species that capture the 37s, and so they get into a battle because they want the technology to get back home, and, you know, like, the technology was destroyed, and I don't know, something like that.
Hmm, that could be interesting.
It just would have been nice to see them run into them again.
Yeah, maybe they've got some space colony few light years away or something.
Yeah. Or we find out that the Briori are the ones that built the pyramids.
That's right. Dun, dun, dun.
If I ever felt like getting fired from my job and getting a face tattoo, I would get the Chakotay one.
You're not allowed to have tattoos at your job?
I don't think you're allowed to have face tattoos at most jobs.
Well, okay, yeah, good point. I'm sure that would be frowned upon, if nothing else. But what if you had, like, a cultural symbol somewhere in a very exposed part of your body, like your hands even?
Well, I mean, cultural significance is different. I mean, if you go to, like, New Zealand and you see the Maoris, like, you see, like, members of parliament have complete face tattoos.
Mm.
And I think that's really cool.
Maybe
but
that's
here in
where
the States,
got
it's a little
from.
Different, yeah. Maybe, yeah. It felt a little like if you have you seen the movie or the trailers for the Ender's Game movie?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, like the Maser Rackham, he was a Maori in in this version, in this retelling.
Okay.
That's why he had his face tattoos.
Okay. So it's that kind of style.
I like that. He's like, are you a member of the 37s? And Kate's just like, just go ahead and say yes. It's
yeah. Yes, true. Go on.
It'd be like them coming up to us and saying, are you a 13?
Yeah. A what?
Yes, I am.
Hmm. I do love this scene. This is what I wanted more of. I guess I wanted more talk and speculation than... Because this is where the real drama is, in my opinion.
I hate that he is a lieutenant commander in rank.
Why?
It bothers me. He should be a full-blown commander. He should be a 3-pip commander.
Well, he's a Maquis lieutenant commander at that.
Yeah, he's a Maquis lieutenant commander with a commander status, but not rank. It bothers me.
Right. And he's called Commander Chakotay.
Right, and everyone will always say, oh, well, a lieutenant commander is called a commander. And I was like, yes, they are, but he is never once called lieutenant commander ever in the show.
No.
And so mm-hmm. it's weird. He is not a lieutenant commander, even though his pips say that he is.
That's
weird.
True. Yeah, why not just make him a commander then?
Because when you look up in Star Trek encyclopedias and when you look up on websites, even when the show was going on, it said Commander Chakotay.
Yeah.
Not, like, even at the beginning of the show, in the opening, it's Commander Chakotay, not Lieutenant Commander Chakotay.
Yeah.
Actually,
yeah,
I think they have his rank at the beginning.
They never really acknowledged this, why there was that disparity.
Yeah. I mean, there were so many, like, the ranks at the beginning of the show was so messed up. I mean.
They are. Yeah.
Like, Tuvok was Lieutenant Commander, then he got knocked down to Lieutenant.
Yeah.
I think Paris was a lieutenant senior grade, and then he got knocked down to lieutenant junior grade, and it's just weird.
Yeah, and then he was dropped down to ensign, regained lieutenant. Yeah. yeah.
Oh, this is when I love it. Janeway always whispers when she gets really intent, like, isn't this an exciting prospect?
Yeah. Am I the only one who's so intent on getting home?
Like, why am I whispering? We're alone.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just very, very important to her, I suppose.
This would have been a good moment for an Indian metaphor.
Or some kind of story, an ancient legend.
Yeah, like the scorpion on the back of the fox or something.
No, let's not and say we did.
Man, I wish I had his chin.
His chin?
I wish I had his chin.
Okay. What's wrong with your chin?
Because I have no chin.
I'm looking at you right now. You have a chin. It doesn't stick out. It's not as prominent and angular.
Yeah.
You want to be... You want the very distinct bone structure.
There you go.
Okay. I gotcha. Well, he and Mulgrew both have very prominent chins.
They do, don't they? I never really thought about it before, but you're right. I mean, Kate Mulgrew has a very distinct and strong chin. I like this. This is so Neelix. This is why I love Neelix. He researched it, and he said, he's like, you know what? These people are far from home. Let's give them some good old-fashioned Talaxian hospitality. And he figured out what they would want to eat before even asking them, and he made them for them.
Yes, and he deferred to cultural stereotypes while he was at it.
He went to regional types, not racial.
I'm sorry, you're giving the Japanese guy rice. You're giving the Americans Jell-O. I know he means well, and it's actually a very kind gesture. It's just, really? Really?
I like that Neelix is like he's establishing his ego already by the second season, where he's talking about how like Captain Janeway would be lost without me.
Yeah, I like how he kind of puffs out his chest too a little bit when he talks about his credentials. You know, he really believes. Yes, I am important. I must strut. Now, this is what I like. This is what I want. I want to hear about who might stay, who might go. Why would you stay? Why would you go?
Yeah, I mean, that could have been introduced a little bit earlier into the show, where we have a little bit more interaction between the crew like this, because right now we have about 5 minutes left.
Yeah, and it goes by so fast from here. Here's another thing.
We easily could have had 15.
Definitely, at least. And I would have liked to have seen somebody maybe even a little ambivalent about the whole thing, too, because this is a planet of humans. Well, not everybody on the ship is human.
That's
so
true.
So this is not going to feel like home any more to them than maybe Voyager isn't at this point. You know, they're not home, but this isn't going to work either.
Yeah, that would be really interesting to hear,
right?
Now that I'm thinking about it. I feel like... You know, like, we needed to see that conversation where, like, oh, man, I'm the only Bolian, you know, on this planet. I mean, if I stay, yeah.
Right. Yeah, just like you're the only Bolian on the ship, probably. And same difference, but with the hope on Voyager of at least possibly... getting back to at least familiarity.
Yeah.
This is not familiar, as good as this place is.
Okay, like, I know that they used this shot just to, like, of the ship in the background just so they could save some money if they used it again. But think about how long it would take to walk as far as she did.
Yeah.
Because you know how, like, when you see a mountain, you're like, oh, that's just, you know, that's just down the ways. No, it takes you, like, 3 days to get there.
Right.
That's kind of the visual effect that we're getting with how far the ship is.
It is. So she walked about 10 miles away from the ship, at least.
Just to think.
Just to get that perspective, yep. Do they have the same hair color?
They have a lot of similar features, except for the eyes.
Yeah, and eyebrows. Yeah. Totally different eyebrows.
But like the nose and the lips and the... Yeah. The chin and the frame are all very similar.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that they don't say Mulcahy here, because that's always the go-to name of a non-senior crew member.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right.
Have you noticed that?
It is a little bit of a surprise now that you mention it. Yeah, I never thought about it.
whenever they need to mention some name that we'll recognize, but is not somebody who is a senior crew member, they always say Mulcahy.
True. But they did throw out a couple of names that we'd heard at this point before.
Yes, that's true.
So, you know. Now, I like this scene. Janeway, I think for the very first time, is really vulnerable in front of Chakotay, in front of anybody at this point. I mean, she's really been held together within herself, and he's there to assure her, hand on the shoulder. I think this is where she really goes to trust him.
Yeah. We definitely see the beginning of a relationship here, and
I would have loved
to have seen like an ensign like oh crap, I'm late, and just like run at the last second.
Well, you know what? That would have been really realistic to have at least a handful of people wanting to go. I know why they did this. I mean, it's for dramatic effect, and we love Voyager so much, we can't leave. But realistically, not everybody was happy at all being on this ship. Somebody would have wanted to leave.
Yeah.
Think about the renegades in Learning Curve who were
about it though. I mean, like it's so early in the mission. It's relatively season one, and everybody still has high hopes that they're going to find a way home.
You think, like, that's what it is?
I really do. I feel like if this was season five, we would have seen people in that cargo bay.
Really? Okay, I completely disagree. I think if you would have done this in season five, then the shot of an empty cargo bay would have made a lot of sense, because by then they were well underway on their mission. They'd become a family at that point, and at least they had each other. On this planet, you'd have to start all over.
I don't think so. I think there would be people who are like, I am sick of this. I am sick of these people. I want to go home. Like, I am sick of having a roommate.
Yeah. Okay, you make a good point.
That's what I see. I mean, just my opinion.
I don't know. I think we're going to have to agree to disagree on that one.
And I personally think that Amelia Earhart would definitely stay on board. I know that you couldn't fit her in the show, but I feel like the real Amelia Earhart would stay.
Yes, she would have, but then that would have required Sharon Lawrence to be on the rest of the show, and, well, yeah.
Also, what's the deal with this? Everyone, please look to the lower left of your screen.
Okay,
Why is it that we, on every single Star Trek show, except for Enterprise, we see this blue haze on the left of the screen?
I have never noticed this before.
TNG,
oh my
Deep
God.
Space Nine, Voyager, there's always a blue haze on the left. Is that because of the tape? Like, back in the day when they had to edit on tape?
I don't know, maybe.
Why don't I see that on every other show? You know, like, what is the deal? It's only Star Trek that I've noticed it.
I wonder if you can see if there's a difference between TNG in DVD, or at least in standard definition, and on Blu-ray. Maybe they corrected for it.
I'm sure that they did, because I haven't noticed it, but I need to go back and check, because I'm pretty sure it's gone.
Do check. Let me know. I'm totally curious now.
And please, people, write to us or go to the forums and let me know that I'm not alone here.
Yes, let's talk about this weird little quirk. That is odd. I'm not going to unsee that now. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Well, that's it for the 37s. We are done. Although we're not done, we've got a couple more things to do before we close up shop on this episode, because the 37s is not the only thing that we've been talking about this week on Trek.fm, so let's have a little look at what else has happened on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Talking Spock with Dave Rossi.
But now you add in the wild card for this one character, that one of the most emotional races in the universe, human beings, is half of what he is.
Earl Grey.
TNG Introductions.
Well, because I think Data's Day was actually the one I was thinking of, so since that one's already taken, I might come in at this
No, I'll just erase
angle.
Everything that Daniel said, and you can just
no,
go.
No.
Daniel, the first time we have a guest. Really? God.
Favoritism!
No. You one-upped her.
The Ready Room.
The Squire of Gothos.
Nobody has that much power. They must have some kind of transporter matter
reshaper device. And it must be over there because he's hanging out by it. You know, it's a small room. What do you expect him to, like, I'm going to dance over here by the salt vampire. I don't know.
The orb.
The minion invasion tactics.
And Bashir says, look, I know what the orders say, but he attacked Chief O'Brien and we have rules against that sort of thing here. So I think that they're trying to figure out, yes, the Federation has rules, but how much are they willing to bend the rules depending on how we push their buttons?
To the journey!
Dealing with the end of Voyager.
I've recorded these on tape and they were all kind of out of order. And so I had my own shuffle where I would just...
Nice.
I just put in a random tape and I would get an episode from season 2, season 6, and then season 3, you know, and it was just really cool.
Oh, that's awesome. Just a grab bag.
Yeah, it really was. And so that was my way of coping, was just spending time with my friends. Warp 5.
Season 1, highs and lows.
He's talking about, it's more of a satiny one.
Okay.
Pretty plain with the piping over the shoulders in the three colors.
Yeah.
No, that's a good
pick. I ordered it, but they... They sent me to Paul's catsuit instead, and it doesn't really fit.
I know, it didn't really hug your curves in the right places, did it?
Commentary, Trek Stars.
Harlan Ellison's Soldier.
It's like Mr. Belvedere, if Mr. Belvedere had really severe PTSD from a war in the future.
It's like Small Wonder, but with a Klingon instead of a little girl.
It's like Alf, if Alf killed tons of people.
Literary Treks.
David Mack, A Ceremony of Losses.
And then we color-coded it, and we started lining up dates and events and saying, well, this book runs from this date to this date. These events in this book happen on these dates. So that if you're writing this scene in book 2, you know that it happens exactly, let's say, 11 days after this event in book 1. And that sort of meticulous, down to the fine detail, granular planning became absolutely essential.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows. They are fantastic, and they will give you your daily Trek Talk fix. You can find us just about anywhere, iTunes, Stitcher, any platform you have, basically. Or if you just want to go to our website, go to trek.fm/pd for the podcast directory. You can listen to all of the episodes right there. Now, let's talk iTunes, because we have a new review posted by 49er Faithful. Gave us 5 stars, gave us a nice review, and we thank you for that. And if you have not written us a review, please go. We'll give you a shout out on the show. We love to do that, and we thank you for your reviews. Now, before we close up shop, let's have a little word from our sponsor.
Our sponsor for this show is Audible.com. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks with more than 150,000 titles to choose from, and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers, Audible has something for everyone. You'll be happy to hear that both Mosaic and Pathways are available from Audible. As a Trek.fm listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice, along with a 30-day trial to see just how great Audible is. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm. And we thank you and Audible for supporting To the Journey and Trek.fm. All right, well, next week we are going to be talking about Seska. That's right. We are continuing our character analysis. Even though we are done with major characters, we are going to continue on with some of our favorite characters who don't quite make it to the bridge crew meetings. So until then, this has been To the Journey!
To the Journey!